Welcome. I'm Hannah Ababa, filling in for Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, artists showed up outraged at the San Francisco Budget and Finance Committee, expressing dissatisfaction at the way public funds were being allocated to arts programs around the city. Disadvantaged artists claimed the budget favored the city's more affluent arts community. A report from the Legislative Analyst's Office confirmed their suspicions. It found that 76% of funding from grants for the arts is going to arts organizations with primarily white audiences, like the symphony or the opera. This figure is unchanged from 1961, when the city's population was 82% white. California recently overcame its last place ranking in per capita state spending on government grants to the arts when Governor Jerry Brown gave a $5 million boost to the California Arts Council. But San Francisco has always been an outlier, leading the nation in the number of nonprofit arts and cultural organizations per residence, with 8 per 10,000 residents, and also having the highest local spending per capita. But are diverse arts organizations getting their fair share of this pie? The reality is that the city isn't made up of an enormous majority of white residents anymore, and people of color now make up 58% of the population. Grants for the Arts actually reduced its percentages of funding to arts organizations of color in the year 2012 to 2013, and the agency's funding for those organizations hasn't improved over the last 25 years. In their recently released awards for 2014-2015, Grants for the Arts allocated nearly $10.3 million for various groups and activities, but funds to organizations of color increased by only 0.6%, meaning at its current rate of change, Grants for the Arts will not achieve cultural equity until the year 2061. So why aren't we seeing a change in the way public arts money is being spent? And who's supporting diverse arts communities around the city? How should public money be best distributed to ensure the broadest public is served? Everyone. Today, joining us for this conversation is Paul Flores, a published poet, performance artist, a playwright, spoken word artist, and youth arts director. He joins us from Sierra Nevada Journeys at Grizzly Creek Ranch, where he's managing the Latino Men and Boys Program funded by the California Endowment. Welcome to the show, Paul.
Thank you. That was a great introduction.
Thank you for being with us. Also with us is Vinay Patel, Executive Director of the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center, which supports and produces multidisciplinary art reflective of the unique experiences of Asian Pacific Islanders living in the United States. And he also organizes the United States of Asian America Festival. And welcome, Vinay.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Thank you. And we are expecting someone from the San Francisco Arts Commission to join us later in the program. And as usual, we want you to join in the conversation. What sorts of arts events or arts programs do you attend? And when you go to them, what do you notice about the audience at these events? And do you think it's reflective of the population of San Francisco or the Bay Area? And if you're an artist, we want to hear from you. Where do you get your funding? And are you aware of the public grants that are available to you and how to navigate them? The number to give us a call, join the conversation, is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. So, Paul, let's start with you. You've received a number of awards and grants from the National Performance Network Creation Fund, NEA Theater Grant, the San Francisco Arts Commission Individual Artist Grant, the National Association for Latino Arts and Culture Fund for the Arts. Many, that's a good thing. How do you navigate the awards that are available? First, how did you find out about them? Are they hard to find?
I do believe that they are rather difficult to find. It depends on your network. So, you know, artists have the responsibility often to themselves to find the resources for funding their own projects. Rarely is the artist out there who gets offered commissions that takes a long time until you are actually have proven yourself to be able to, you know, create, produce, and execute your vision in an art project, which means a lot of years of working, doing stuff for free, you know, and creating those connections. You know, luckily, I came out of San Francisco State's creative writing program and got involved in Youth Speaks right away before we had any funding. We were doing it all for free back in 96. And, you know, by, you know, showing how, you know, dedicated we were to creating safe places for young people to do spoken word and poetry, it got a lot of people's attention. So once I got connected to the nonprofit arts community inside San Francisco, then I was exposed to the SFAC. And I remember when Lawrence Du was the director there, and, you know, I was rejected many times for my grants before I actually, you know, was able to be awarded anything. So it's a long struggle, and I want to encourage the artists who are listening today who have not received any of this funding to continue to apply, to continue to search for resources, because, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, if we can send more applications in, then they see a demand, a need to fund more artists. And one of my jobs, I think, as an artist of color in San Francisco, is to encourage more of the people I work with and the younger artists coming up to, you know, search for those opportunities, to apply, to, you know, get the technical assistance workshops that CCI offers, you know, Center for Cultural Innovation, or, you know, the San Francisco Arts Commission. I mean, there are opportunities out there, but you've got to be connected to the network. I had good mentors, so,
right, so
one
you,
thing is finding mentors. Yeah,
you were pretty connected. So as you work with young artists who may not be connected, are you finding that they've even heard of these grants, for example?
Yeah, totally not. It's very difficult to find. I'm talking about young artists, you know, maybe in their 20s and whatnot. They don't know how to fund their work, you know? So what we've got going on right now is, depending on what art scene you're a part of, okay? So I work a lot in urban arts and hip-hop theater and spoken word. And so, you know, I'm working with a lot of young artists of color who are, you know, they're actually being asked to pay to perform in certain venues, right? So, you want to get on this show? Well, you've got to pay $500, basically, and that'll get you 10 minutes on stage. I think this is really backwards, you know, but this is the way a lot of young people are learning, you know, the business of art from a really kind of backwards way. And I feel like, you know, there are ways in which you can get actual support where people will pay you, right? But you've also got to learn some skills. You've got to learn how to do a budget. You've got to learn how to write a narrative. You've got to get references. You know what I mean?
Right.
These are things that are around the technical issues of art and grants that are hard, administrative. You know, people don't like doing administrative work as artists. But luckily, I had nonprofit training, so I was able to do that.
And so you said you applied and applied and applied, and sometimes you were rejected many times before actually getting it. How can you tell me a little bit more about how the application process works? It seems from what you're saying, it's not really kind of, I apply, they give it to me right away. What happens?
No. No, because you got to learn the system. They ask you these questions, what is innovative about your work, for instance? And, you know, how do you outreach to your audiences, or what's your marketing strategy, right? And so you have to answer these questions inside your narrative. And, you know, not many people have technical writing skills. Artists, depending on what your field is, and I'm a writer, so this is what I do, right? But if I'm a musician, or if I'm a visual artist, or if I'm a graphic artist or muralist, maybe my strength isn't in narrative. You know what I mean? So I need to go find that support. I had to learn how to write these grants. Mm-hmm. I had to learn to trust my voice, to tell the truth. This is what I do, why I do it, and how I do it. And I want to say that specifically to those people out there who haven't received those grants, right? Part of it is telling the truth. Say exactly what you do, right? The best to your ability. Try not to conform necessarily, because then again, your piece sounds exactly like everybody else. You got to learn the language, right? What words, you know, mean what, and what's the, you know, what are the different kind of catchphrases you need to do, but you also got to just be who you really are inside these grants. I think the more original and unique you are in your voice, you tend to catch the attention of the people sitting on a panel. That's the other thing. I didn't know who was going to be looking at my grant. Grants are looked at by peers, supposedly, right? So I've sat on grant panels. I've reviewed, you know, peer-created proposals. And so it took me a while to realize that, too. Like, oh, you know, at least the Arts Commission has an open process where you can go watch your proposal be reviewed.
And so, right? So Paul, do you think it's then the responsibility of, let's say, the Arts Commission or any grantor of money to, you know, not only, one, really make known this, you know, this opportunity for a grant, but also kind of help people out along the way? Or is that something that you needed to figure out on yourself? Was there any help from kind of the body giving you the grant?
Well, I think it is, particularly public funding. I think if you're a public funding entity, you should be making opportunities for diverse voices to participate, no matter what. That should be a top priority. I think what I learned by doing the Arts and Communities program, where I worked with the Central American Resource Center to create a play called Blacas about Central American immigrants, I think that type of intentionality in getting certain parts of your demographic to participate in arts and civic engagement, because to me, arts is civic engagement, especially if it's coming from public money. So we want the most diverse voices in our environment to have opportunities to express themselves.
And how do you find them? How do you seek them?
Well, I think the way I've seen, you know, a lot of the SFAC do is that, you know, they go directly to the organizations that service, you know, certain populations. So I remember, you know, Galería de la Raza was given the opportunity to re-grant funds for Native American artists, right? Because there wasn't really any Native American organizations in San Francisco. So they said, well, Galería de la Raza has had a history of presenting some Native American visual artists. So, you know, they connected with the representatives of that organization because they have a history of working with that population.
Mm-hmm.
So the question here is, who's running what funding, you know, programs, and what's their connection to our community? How well do they know our community? Are they familiar with the community demographics? Do they know who's creating art about which communities and which organizations serve these communities? I think that's really important for public funding. Is that we are given the data, such as was presented to the city supervisors around how funding was being spent. We need that type of information so that we can better improve our relationships and opportunities for artists of color to present their work.
Let me go to Vinay Patel from the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center. Vinay, so why don't you give me a little idea about how grants have worked for your cultural center and your cultural activities?
The Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center is one of six San Francisco cultural centers supported by
the San Francisco Arts Commission. And so we get a grant from the Arts Commission to help service the Asian American community in San Francisco. Though we are a cultural center, we don't necessarily have a building, but we do programming for the center. And part of what we do is reach out to many arts organizations and artists in our community. And in doing so, we also do fundraising for ourselves, and we also assist artists in our community to get funds. And what we try to get to know is most of the processes in San Francisco through Grants for the Arts, through San Francisco Arts Commission, and then we also look out to other possible funding resources that are not necessarily arts-focused, but they are maybe the Department of Children, Youth, and Family, OEWD, Office of Economic and Workforce Development. There might be opportunities there, so we try to reach out and find out as much as we can. And what we've seen is that, like Paul said, that a lot of artists don't know of these opportunities, or they feel that, you know, it's not worth it because they don't have enough resources to keep getting rejected.
And so can you tell me about your specific grant application process with the San Francisco Arts Commission? Did, you know, who came to who first, and what happened after that?
Well, the San Francisco Arts Commission is a very unique, I'll say, funder and in the philanthropic world, because the San Francisco Arts Commission has a, through the Cultural Equity Grants Program, they have an open panel process that that Paul was referring to. And so that has a tremendous level of transparency and trust through that process, because your peers are sitting over there. You know what the rankings, you know what your rankings will be. You'll get comments back about your grants. And you, like Paul said, you can sit there and listen to a panel of your peers talk about your grant. And I, through my organization, we've been rejected more times than we've gotten funding from the Arts Commission, but we never felt that we were cheated out of, or we always knew why we didn't get funded, and we had a chance to then try to make our applications better. And we also then can take lessons learned and then pass it on to the artists that we work with so they can have even more stronger proposals going forward.
And I'd like to invite our listeners to give us a call at 800-798-8255 if you have a question or comment. What arts events do you go to, and what do you notice about the audiences of these events? Do you see many people of color where you go? If you're an artist, how do you get your funding? Where do you get it from? Do you feel it's intuitive the way, is it easy to find grants, and is it easy to navigate grants? Have you been able to find help finding grants and navigating grants, or is it a difficult road to trek? Give us a call and tell us your experiences at 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255, or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. Paul Flores, I was wondering, you know, as we're talking about people of color and arts, I was wondering what you see the connection is between art and politics, for example. How can art, especially art that comes from traditionally disenfranchised people, how can it change our social structure and social practice? How important is it? How important is art to creating change on the ground?
I do believe that art, the 21st century, you know, art being created now, has to have social practice elements involved, meaning we have to create those connections with underrepresented communities, because the demographic change demands that we incorporate more diverse audiences, more diverse programming, more diverse artists in our cultural discourse. Otherwise, what you see is you see organizations dying if they don't incorporate the voices of the disenfranchised, the voices of immigrants, the voices of gay and lesbian artists, the voices of women writers and performers. So I think it's key, you know, that we have opportunities to engage artists and communities that have been underrepresented into the whole cultural fabric of our city. For instance, when I was creating Placas, I was, you know, funded to work with Central American immigrants and then Central American immigrant gang members who were getting their tattoos removed. This was a community that was entirely alienated and marginalized, right? Not only are they undocumented, not only are they gang members, but then they're all tattooed, right? And so it's like we're trying to say that our community exists too. We need also to support our community. So when we created Placas based on these interviews with
and
folks going...
And that is your play, Placas,
yeah,
the most dangerous tattoo. Mm-hmm.
Right. So when we created this based on these interviews, and we ended up, you know... learning a lot about the lives of these folks who had come from El Salvador, come from Honduras, right? And here we have a new, you know, situation right now, humanitarian crisis around the border with these, with a lot of undocumented Central American immigrants who are being demonized as we speak by the right, right? Are being said that they're diseased, that they're gang members, that they're that they're, you know, here to leech off the system, all these really horrible things, and there's no response from the people that are being demonized. My job as an artist, as a social practice artist, is to get that voice, the other side, and put it up front so you can get a human perspective on who are the people that we're not considering in our civic engagement.
And in our arts practices. And in our arts.
And in our arts practices, yeah, absolutely. So I think that that's what art can and should do now. It should bring up those voices that haven't been heard from.
Right. And I'd like to remind listeners of our number, 800-798-8255. Let's go to a caller. Hi, you are on the line. Lisa in San Francisco.
Yes, hi. I'm a Latina woman who's lived in the Mission for many, many years, and I see a lot of the very incredible arts organizations losing not their funding because of lack of good work, but rather losing their spaces to be able to do their work. Like your guest mentioned Galería de la Raza. I understand that René Yáñez, an excellent, fantastic person in the community who's been doing so much work, is facing possible eviction problems, if I'm not mistaken. Also, I've seen many arts organizations have to move because of, you know, that. I don't see the symphony having to move. I don't see, you know, I don't see the same, you know, infrastructure problem among the more affluent part of the city having to move. So I think that arts funding needs to reshape its thinking to be able to allow for more stable places for the more disadvantaged artists to be able to actually perform or do their work. It's what the quality of your work is one thing, but the place where you can get to do it is another. And there are places that have to struggle day in and day out, like Red Poppy, for example. There's been a regular yearly MAP Mission arts program being done on a yearly basis, very regularly, and most, if not all, of those artists do things completely free, and they use their own resources, their own ingenuity, and all those different efforts should be supported with a place, you know, with an actual place to be able to do the work.
Okay, thank you so much for that call, Lisa. Let me add to those places in the Mission that shut down or relocated: Hyde Street Community Services, Under One Roof, and Root Division. It seems like every month somebody's saying my favorite place to go witness art is shutting down, or one of my favorite, you know, bookstores where I go see a play is
Don't
shutting
forget
down.
Intersection for the Arts.
Right. And we will talk about Intersection for the Arts. We have an email from a listener who's saying, can your guests talk about Intersection for the Arts, which has been around for 60 years and is one of the long running arts organizations in San Francisco. There's a budget crisis facing Intersection for the Arts, and we will talk about that. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Hanat Baba. We're talking arts funding, and we'll be right back after a break.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you'd like to add a perspective that you think has not been heard yet in today's discussion, or you'd want to ask a question that you feel needs to be answered, please join our conversation by calling 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. Our email inbox address is feedback@yourcallradio.org, or you can simply post your question or comment on the website, yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. Following that at noon, Bina. And then at 1 o'clock this afternoon, KALW's weekly magazine of most things culturally considered open air.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about funding diversity in the arts. This is Your Call. I'm Hanat Baba, filling in for Rose Aguilar. Tomorrow on the show, the Friday Media Roundtable, where we speak to journalists about the week's news and the work they do. On Monday, what should be the U.S. response to the children amassing along the border? Should nonviolent immigration violators be jailed? What's the appropriate response to these civil infractions? And today, are diverse arts organizations getting their fair share of the funding pie? Who are the organizations serving the wide-ranging communities of San Francisco? We want to hear from you as well, so give us a call if you're an artist. How do you get your funding? Have you had struggles or issues with grants and funding for your art? If you go out and enjoy the San Francisco Bay Area arts events and programs, what do you notice about the audiences and the kind of art that's being presented? Is it as diverse as the area we live in? 866-798-8255 is the number, or you can shoot us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. With me is Paul Flores. He is an artist, a youth educator, and a playwright, just everything, Paul. And we were talking before the break about Intersection for the Arts, which has been around for 60 years. They're facing a severe budget crisis. It's really one of the few arts organizations that does support, you know, communities of color, the diverse communities living in the Bay Area. And our emailer from Julie Queen says, we risk losing an amazing cultural organization that supported so many artists over the years. And she said they are one of the last fiscal sponsors for artists. So, Paul, Intersection for the Arts, what happened?
Well, I'm not going to say it, but I know the inner workings of what happened at Intersection for the Arts. I do know they were not able to meet the budget that they have to in order to continue programming. So they closed down some of their programs, including they stopped the visual arts, literary, and jazz programming. They also stopped their theater presentation and commissioning projects. So basically what they're only doing right now is running their incubator program and I think honoring any fiscal sponsored projects they had already going. So I don't believe they're taking on any new ones, but I can't be sure of that. What I do know is that they had a recent transition in leadership. As you may know, that Deborah went from Intersection for the Arts to leading Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. And so I think that what happens often is when a strong leader leaves one organization, there is a vacuum of leadership. And I don't know what happened, but after the move, when Intersection could not renew its lease over on 16th and Valencia Street in the Mission, they moved to the Chronicle building, were there for a few years, and then the transition of leadership left a big hole. And what it appears to look like is that they weren't able to recover from that, that there wasn't a very strong succession plan. And so what happened was Kevin Chen and Sean San Jose and a number of other really great artists and art workers in our city had to be laid off, and programming shut down, and Intersection on the verge of basically ceasing to, you know, continue. So I feel like there's a lot of things that have to do with that.
What is lost when an organization like that is going down like that?
Well, what's lost is another venue where we can, you know, gather our people, where we explore our stories. What's lost is also morale in the city. I think it was bigger than anything. A lot of artists who, I mean, you know, 60 years is a very long time. Imagine all the artists that are helped by that organization, myself being one of them. Not only have I been commissioned by the Intersection for the Arts, I've helped support artists there. I've been supported by them, fiscal sponsorship. Youth Speaks was a fiscal program of Intersection for the Arts back in the 90s. I love Intersection for the Arts. People are heartbroken about this, and they feel like, you know, what's happening to our city when one of our best loved arts organizations can't support its mission because it has no money, it can't keep up with the rent, it can't find the resources necessary to continue its programming. Why, you know, what is the new population in our city that isn't interested in giving money to or supporting the arts programming at places like Intersection for the Arts, which creates work specifically about our city often? You know, I feel like there's a lot of people in our city who are only here to go to restaurants and clubs and don't really care about about the discourse of San Francisco.
Okay.
And I think Paul makes a really good point about the morale issue as well. And I think that's where a lot of the pain that we're seeing and the outbreaks that we're seeing coming out is because this is not something that anybody was foreseeing, that an organization like Intersection can fall upon these times.
And this is
my organization has worked with Intersection for many years.
Renee, let me just introduce you. If I can just introduce you, that is Renee Baldocchi, and I hope I got your last name right. Is it Baldocchi or Baldocchi?
No, it's Baldocchi.
Baldocchi.
Yes.
Is with us. She's Director of Public Programs at the Fine Arts Museums of San Francisco. And Tom, from the Director, he's their Director of Cultural Affairs at the San Francisco Arts Commission, is also with us. Hello, welcome both of you.
Thank you.
So, Renee, we were talking earlier about kind of diverse arts, and one thing that came up was the symphony and the opera and fine arts museums, and the contention that these, you know, kind of groups of high art are not reaching out enough to communities of color. So what kind of outreach do you have to communities at the fine arts museums you work for?
Okay, well, I'm happy to answer that. And after I answer that, I'd actually like to make a remark about Intersection for the Arts as well, because I'm sitting on their transition committee. But in terms of the work that we're doing here at the Fine Arts Museums of San Francisco, specifically the DeYoung Museum, for the last 10 years since the DeYoung opened its doors, we've been hosting the Friday nights at the DeYoung series, as well as the Artist in Residence program, and a newly formed program called the Artist Fellows. And we have been concentrating all of our efforts on breaking the doors open and making the museum accessible to all kinds of people, and the goal really being that we want to reflect the San Francisco Bay Area demographic, and that has been at the helm of our vision actually since 1991, when we formed our first advisory committee in conjunction with the Henry Osawa Tanner exhibition. So this has actually been something we've been focusing on for the last 25 years, but when the DeYoung reopened its doors, because of all the learnings that we had when we were trying to create a new building here in San Francisco, we did learn that we were not serving the community in a way that the community wanted to be served. And so we decided to really focus our resources and our energies on programming that would bring in a diverse array of performers and artists and community members. And since we opened our doors in 2005, we've been able to bring in over 6,000 artists from the local Bay Area. And these artists bring in their community. So we noticed that the best way to you know, make our resources available has been through a grassroots effort of working with artists who then bring their communities with them.
Mm-hmm. And the DeYoung's Friday nights, I've been to a couple. They're known to draw a big cross-section of the city. So does the same audience attend these nighttime community events compared to regular hours?
You know, we're just starting to get the surveys out there in a much more intersected kind of way, and I don't feel that I can really speak to that because I don't have the statistics in front of me. What I can say is that on the Friday nights, which the programs are free of charge, I'm noticing a lot of repeat visitors every week, because I'm there every Friday. And so, like, the community is building in terms of people that keep coming back. And then there's always a new sector of people that come in. And we're going to start, you know, putting on our surveys if for the people that fill out the surveys when they come during the week, during the day, if they are, in fact, familiar with the Friday night program. So, unfortunately, I cannot answer that question with accuracy right now.
Okay. Thank you for that. And again, let me just throw out our number, 866-798-TALK, if you'd like to join the conversation, arts and the funding of arts. Also, you can send us an email at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And as promised, we are joined by someone from the San Francisco Arts Commission. And I'd like to welcome Tom DeGainey to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So we've been talking about you a lot today, about the commission. So I'm wondering, my first question to you is this, you know, the 76% number that we've been saying today, 76% of public grant money in San Francisco goes towards art programs, but the ones with primarily white audiences, even as people of color make up over half the city's population. So if you can, you know, tell me about the commission and what role it's playing in really drawing artists from communities of color.
Yeah, well, it's an important conversation, and the conversation of cultural equity is a national conversation in arts and culture. And I think the San Francisco Arts Commission has been a national leader in the conversation of cultural equity. The Cultural Equity Endowment was one of the first and one of the only remaining programs in the country dedicated to serving organizations and artists in historically underserved communities. So the fact that that program has been such a landmark grant-making program in the country, we know people are watching about how San Francisco is responding to shifting demographics, but also more importantly, shifting trends in arts participation and a diversification in how we see the arts impacting our communities and being a part of how we get to know one another. And I did get to listen a little bit earlier, and I think in terms of that accessibility, that is a critical point, and I appreciated Paul's kind of explanation about the complexities of accessing grant funds. And so I did want to take the opportunity to make sure all the callers and that everybody listening knows that we do have some upcoming grant deadlines for the Cultural Equity Grants Program. The Cultural Equity Initiatives and the Individual Artist Commission's deadlines are coming up Friday, August 1st. And mm-hmm. So listeners are welcome to go to our website, www.sfartscommission.org. And if you look at the search bar, you can click grants and download the guidelines. We also are going to have another round of application guidelines coming out in a couple of weeks, and we will be having a number of technical assistance workshops. I think that point about how artists are supported in the application process is critical to ensuring a really diverse and representative pool of applicants. So that next round of grant deadlines will be coming out next week, or in 2 weeks rather, and there'll be a series of 5 to 6 different community workshops where interested parties can come, learn about the guidelines, ask questions to see where they might qualify, and then get assistance from Arts Commission staff in terms of completing their application.
So the Arts Commission also oversees the city-owned cultural centers, like the Bayview Opera House, Mission Cultural Center, SOMA Arts Cultural Center. What's the relationship between these organizations and the San Francisco Arts Commission? Do you control programming or content, or what happens? What's the relationship like?
We've had a long-standing partnership with the 6 city cultural centers. 4 are in physical buildings, and then 2, the Asian Pacific Islander Cultural Center that Vinay leads, and the Queer Cultural Center are both centers that function throughout the city as virtual centers. And so we have a close relationship. We're technically the landlord for the 4 city-owned buildings, and then we grant out approximately $2.2 million in general operating support to all 6 centers on an annual basis. So it's a close partnership. We meet monthly, and we do share among the group different promising practices and kind of best practices in community arts. And I'm also thrilled to announce that we are underway with a $5.2 million renovation of the Bayview Opera House.
Mm. All right, let's go to some of our calls. Let's go to Idris Akumar in San Francisco. Welcome to your call.
Hi.
Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah, this is Idris Akumar with San Francisco's Cultural Odyssey organization that's been around for 35 years. Myself and my partner, Rodessa Jones, have basically been in been in this arts ecosystem for a very long time. And I just wanted to, first of all, congratulate you for doing this program and to say hello to Paul and everybody else involved. I think that one of the things that's being that's lacking with the program is a historical context of what has happened here in San Francisco, going back, actually dating back to almost 25 years ago. So if you're kind of a younger artist or haven't been around as long as myself and Redessa, you wouldn't remember what happened with Festival 2000, which was the was supposed to be the acknowledgement of multicultural artists, a huge festival that was started, or at least instigated, with grants for the arts support. And historically, Festival 2000 collapsed and burned in the first week of the festival. And it was supposed to celebrate multicultural artists. My project with Bill T. Jones, myself, and Redessa was one of the few projects that actually, you know, received a commission and got paid. All the other artists, multicultural artists, either lost the money for the commission, were not paid. It was just a complete debacle. However, out of that debacle came arts activism on the part of the artists, multicultural artists here in San Francisco. And it resulted in the San Francisco Arts Task Force that was composed of individual artists, some of the representatives from the ballet, the opera, and the symphony, and just art supporters. And this Arts Task Force resulted in the creation of the Cultural Equity Endowment, Cultural Equity Program, which is now what is the one of the main resources for organizations and artists of color. But this would not have happened unless the artists would have really got together, protested, and basically through arts activism helped to bring the Cultural Equity Program into being. And this is very important to know, and it's also very important to know that Grants for the Arts was integral to, even though the festival crashed and burned, if it hadn't been for Grants for the Arts, there wouldn't be no festival, and then consequently, it would not have been the arts activism that resulted in the creation of the Cultural Equity Program. So what I'm saying is that I feel that San Francisco is one of the best places to be in America for funding, arts funding. Yes, there are things that need to be...
So these numbers don't discourage you?
Oh, absolutely not. Not at all. I think, yes, there needs to be some tweaking and some continued arts activism to address the inequities, but such, and particularly such as things like the size of your budget being what determines how large of a grant you receive. Consequently, for many arts organizations of color that have smaller budgets, it would take them a long time in order to, because a lot of times you only can get like maybe 10% or 10% of your budget. You can only request a grant that's the size that does not is not at more than 10% of your budget, which basically gives us many organizations at a disadvantage. Whereas the symphony and the opera have these huge budgets, the size of the grant that they can ask for, you know, are in the five and six figures, in $500,000, six or whatever the situation is. Whereas, so that's the budget size is a big issue. And
that's
really
an issue we are discussing today with the San Francisco Arts Commission, with Tom DeGainey, and we had Renee Baldocchi earlier. So thank you for the call, Idris. I really appreciate you calling in and, you know,
thank
just
you,
giving us that perspective. And the story, you know, that's a great story. And, you know, and Tom, he's not discouraged by the numbers. What do you make of that? What do you think?
Well, I think the need for that activism that Idris speaks to is critical. So we are in a moment in time where issues of artist displacement and the displacement of arts organizations is the issue of the day. And I know a caller earlier mentioned that. And I think that is a critical need for the community to rally around and look at how we are going to come up with the solutions to maintain San Francisco's unique identity and the rich arts community we have here. The city, the Board of Supervisors, and the mayor have recently allocated $2 million to a nonprofit displacement mitigation fund. And we're looking to contract with an intermediary organization that can administer those grants out to the community to small and mid-sized arts organizations who are facing displacement. So organizations like Root Division, like Galleria della Raza, and others who are seeing exorbitant rent increases. So we're seeing rent increases that we've never seen even in past economic booms in San Francisco. So we have to look at some long-term solutions of arts ownership, particularly for our small and mid-sized arts organizations. I think another model that is really holding a lot of promise is the Community Arts Stabilization Trust. This is a new endeavor founded by the Kenneth Ranin Foundation, who seeded the project with a $5 million contribution. And the model of the program is to acquire arts and culture assets that are deed restricted, and the first two acquisitions they've made is a theater at 80 Turk Street in the Tenderloin, and they are working with CounterPulse to acquire that building and to work with CounterPulse over a 7 to 10 year period to buy back the building and retain that building for arts and culture use. They also helped Luggage Store on 6th and Market purchase their building. So I see the need for this arts ownership over time as we're going to see continued strains on the real estate market in San Francisco. Mm. I think it's essential that arts and culture begin to grow our ownership. And as we look at kind of any economic pressures, we know that pathways out of poverty and pathways out of a lot of the systems of oppression is going to be ownership within the community. So I think we see some emerging models, and we need to see greater investments both from private philanthropy as well as the city to ensure that we're helping artists and arts organizations acquire these spaces so that we can endow them for into the future.
And let's go to another caller, Scott in San Francisco. Hi, welcome. Hello, Scott.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you? I just wanted to make a comment. You earlier had asked about the audiences that you see when you go to performing arts events. I also wanted to mention that many of the arts organizations who receive funds from Grants of the Arts are actually doing arts education in the San Francisco Unified School District. Hmm. And they're serving very diverse populations. And I just wonder what will happen to those programs if that funding goes away.
Right. Okay. Thanks for the call. So, Tom, can you answer that about Grants for the Arts?
Yeah. So I do want to clarify, the San Francisco Arts Commission is separate than Grants for the Arts, and we're lucky in the city that we have a number of arts organizations. But I do know that a lot of arts organizations have pretty extensive arts education programs. The Symphony, for instance, serves every elementary school student with their AIM program, which is a national model, and we know the demographics of the school district are very diverse. So arts education, I think, is absolutely critical, and not just for our larger budget institutions, but organizations like Loco Bloco, which are funded by the Arts Commission, and other small and mid-sized budget organizations that also have very significant impact in our public education system. Because I think what we've known in California since Prop 13 is that we have been decimated in public education. And as we look at leveling this income disparity in our society more broadly, I believe firmly that a high-quality education for every young person is essential, and we have to have a robust arts education to be a part of a holistic education. And we've seen arts education be cut across the state for years, and so now many small, mid-sized, and large-budget arts organizations are having to fill that gap to ensure that every young person receive a high-quality arts education. We're lucky in San Francisco that we do have the Public Education and Enrichment Fund, which then-Supervisor Tom Amiano helped create about 10 years ago, We're going to be seeing that come up again on the ballot this November, but it is one of the few models in the country where the city is actually designating money, in this case, for sports, libraries, arts, and music. So we see the ecosystem needing to serve young people in our public education system to ensure that every young person gets a high-quality arts education, and not just young people whose parents might be able to fundraise or pay for a class after school. We have to have this be an essential part and a right to every young person to receive a high-quality arts education. I think that's a big social justice issue of our time.
Well, thank you. Tom DeCagney from the San Francisco Arts Commission. Paul Flores, a final word from you. We only have a couple of seconds left. Are you hopeful in this climate?
I'm not. I'm not hopeful. I do think that there is a lot of responsibility on our politicians to create policies that will ensure that the artists who are in our community now can continue to create art in our community. I think that's part of what we do in San Francisco. We protect our integrity as a city and a culture. I think that we are facing humongous corporate pressure from a lot of these internet tech communities and corporations that are buying up land and changing the whole landscape and culture of our city. And if things aren't done quickly and done right, then we will not be having this conversation about diversity.
Great. Thank you so much. That's Paul Flores. Thank you also to Vinay Patel, Renee Baldocci, and Tom DeCagney, who all joined us today talking about arts funding. Thank you all for listening. I'm Hanat Baba. This has been Your Call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss an investigation by the Center for Investigative Reporting that reveals how the federal GI Bill is supporting for-profit colleges instead of helping veterans. We'll also talk about the $40 billion for-profit college industry. We'll be joined by the Center for Investigative Reporting's Aaron Glantz and Republic Report's David Halperin. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Holly Kernan and you.
Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan, Ali Budner, and Becca Hoekstra produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.